You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
And this is one of the top stories on our website today. The top five executives at the financial services group Discovery Holdings receiving total remuneration of 205 million rand in the last financial year. And despite being group chief executive, Adrian Gore receiving the third highest remuneration of 30.7 million rand during the 2024 financial year. And against that backdrop, the new Kokkela Director's Remuneration Report 2024, which provides an analysis of executive and non-executive director remuneration for around 220 JSE-listed companies and six state-owned enterprises, shows that CEO total remuneration experienced a reduction in 2019-2020, obviously due to the COVID-19 pandemic and lockdown restraints, but then an uptick. I'm in conversation now with the MD of Kokkela Remuneration Advisors, Lawrence Grubb. A very warm welcome to you, and in the briefest possible terms, just explain to me how you conduct the survey.
Good afternoon, Jeremy. Thank you for the opportunity. Jeremy, we extract all the data from the annual remuneration reports that are published by companies in their financial statements every year. And they are obliged to publish the details of the remuneration of all their top team of executives or directors, as well as non-executive directors. And so we capture all that data together with performance criteria related to the company.
Now, 2019-2020, obviously anomalous because of the pandemic, but by what percentage then did CEO total remuneration increase through to 2023, the period of your survey?
Yeah, well, starting off the low from 2019, the increase was about 10% per year for the CEOs, and CFOs was about the same as well. So there's certainly been a healthy increase in the pay, but one needs to know that that increase was almost exclusively, bar some small percentages to the guaranteed, all in the variable pay. In other words, the short and the long-term incentives, which is, to my mind anyway, at least good in the sense that it's related to the performance of the company, and not, you know, necessarily huge 10% increases to the guaranteed pay.
How do you break this down sectorially, if you can?
So what we do, and it's very important, because different industries pay differently. And the interesting thing is that industries like basic materials, consumer goods or services tend to be much larger companies. And so when you look at their pay for the CEO on the guaranteed pay side, typically they paid higher than the rest of the industries. But one mustn't be confused then, because that's not necessarily an industry thing rather than a size of company thing. But certainly when you look at the variable pay, you can see that, you know, basic materials and financials tend to be the highest payers in the variable pay aspect.
Do you also look at lowest total remuneration?
For in terms of the organizations?
Yes.
No, we don't. We haven't started capturing that because that hasn't been published yet. But yes, in terms of the new Companies Act, it will be.
And Lawrence Grubb, what about length of service for chief executive officers? Your study, I see, also goes into that. Has that changed from 2018 through to 23?
Jeremy, yes, there's been a big change. And I think that's quite an important thing, because part of the increase could well be from the number of new executives being bought in to run these organizations. Prior to 2018, we used to have a significant number of people, of CEOs, that had been in the company for 6 years or longer, about 51%. After, for the last 6 years now, we see that only 18% of the CEOs have been in their companies for 6 years or longer. So there's been a fundamental shift in terms of the CEOs of JSE-listed companies from, you know, the old guard maybe to the new executives taking over, the new team taking over. But one must remember that every time you buy in a CEO, you're invariably having to buy that CEO at a premium. So that also can be a cause for the 10% increase in the CEO's pay.
Also, I'm wondering whether the complexity of an organization and the associated risk with that affects the pay of a chief executive, total guaranteed pay in any way.
It does a lot, Jeremy. And one of the big, you know, concerns, well, not concerns, but things that we need to understand is that because executive pay is linked to the size of the organization, because as organizations grow, they, as you said, they become more complex. Mm. They operate in different jurisdictions. They have many more different operations, people, et cetera, et cetera. So as they grow, so does the remuneration for the CEOs or the executives. Now, that's not the same as for the people at the lower end of the organization. Their jobs and the salaries do not grow in line with the size of the organization. So when we talk about a pay gap and we say we must try and narrow the pay gap, I personally don't think that's possible, because over time, organizations should and must get bigger and bigger, and hence the pay of the top levels will get bigger. But I think what we can do is to try and do the best we can to elevate the remuneration at the lowest level. So to try and increase the lowest level's pay to a living wage, but not at the expense of employment. We've got way too many unemployed in the country, and without a hope of getting a job. And we certainly don't want to be increasing pay for the lowest levels at the expense of having to get rid of a number of the lowest, you know, paid workers for that.
And Lawrence, the numbers that you've cited, particularly in terms of top-end pay, are you in any way able to benchmark this internationally, or do you not do that?
We do look at it, you know, in many cases, because obviously we advise clients on their remuneration, and many of them are multinational, if not global, organizations. And so we do end up benchmarking against, you know, other companies from the UK or USA, et cetera, Australia. But, you know, the thing is with our currency, once you divide by 20 or 18 or 17, whatever it is, the numbers look quite small. And that's the strange thing. So while, you know, our remuneration here for executives in rands looks to be significant, when it comes into Australian dollars or pounds or US dollars, it's actually below the median. It's significantly below the median.
And just finally, we've been looking at executive positions, but what about remuneration for non-execs?
So non-execs, they've had sort of a more of a steady kind of increase. What's interesting there is that, you know, they didn't really drop during the COVID times because their pay is not really linked to performance. So they kind of continued to get their steady increases. Non-executive chairman as well, they've seemed to have a steady rise, except we had a bit of a drop in 2022, and that was largely because of some anomalies in terms of who resigned as chairman or moved out as chairman. But what's also very interesting is many people haven't heard of a lead independent director. And the lead independent director is almost the same as a deputy chairperson who's often designated to take over from the non-executive chair, or in the case where the chairman is not a non-executive or independent, rather, sorry, is not independent, then the lead independent director will play that role. And that the pay for LIDs has been growing significantly as companies, I think, try and understand this role and attach a value to it. And that's often determined by, you know, who you can find in the market that can play that role.
I'm going to leave it there with my appreciation, Lawrence Grubb, MD, Kokela Remuneration Advisors. I do appreciate your time.